Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As expected, the Trump administration has announced plans to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, known as DACA. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders at a press briefing emphasized that Congress must take on immigration reform.
I don't think the American people elected Congress to do things that were easy. They elected them to make a government that works, to work properly, and to work for American people. And that's their job. And if they can't do it, then they need to get out of the way and let somebody else who can take on a heavy lift and get things accomplished.
Coming up, we're going to hear from groups for and against DACA, and we'll get to the bottom of the constitutional question of whether then-President Obama had the legal right to order DACA in the first place. Joining us now is Politico National Political Reporter Eliana Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
President Trump yesterday tweeted this: Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit the issue. And he put an exclamation point at the end of that. That's the latest from President Trump. What are you making of that now?
It's the "I will revisit the issue" that's the significant part of the president's statement, because this is really an issue that neither the executive branch nor the legislative branch has wanted to deal with. And the president could have simply ended DACA and wound down this program, but he didn't want to do that. Instead, he gave the legislative branch, Congress, 6 months to find a fix. But he didn't quite do that. He indicated that if Congress doesn't do anything, he himself will revisit the issue. And I think that's a real indication that the president is worried that Congress won't deal with the issue, as they have indicated that they don't want to do. And if they don't, he himself will take another look.
The president and Attorney General Sessions both have said that Congress, rather than the executive branch, is responsible for writing immigration law. Congress has tried and failed. What are the prospects for DACA in Congress this time around?
I actually think that the president, by saying that he'll revisit the issue, hurt the chances that Congress will take this up, because this is an issue that nobody wants to deal with. And if the president had indicated that he simply won't deal with this again, would have increased the chances that Congress would have tackled this on their own. Nobody wants to deal with it. Nobody also wants to be blamed for leaving these young people who came here through no fault of their own twisting in the wind. So I do think that if the president had indicated he was not open to taking up this issue again, Congress would have felt more pressure to take up this issue in the next 6 months. But they have proven since President Obama enacted this executive action in June of 2012, that was actually supposed to be a temporary provision until Congress took it up themselves. But they haven't done so in the last 5 years, and I have no indication that they'll be any more successful in the next 6 months.
My guest is Eliana Johnson, national political reporter for Politico. We're talking about the decision or the announcement yesterday by the Trump administration to end the DACA law, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program. If you have a question or comment coming up later on the program, we'd love to hear from you. We'll get the information to you as far as contacting us then. How many DACA-esque bills have been in Congress, have been introduced in the last 5 years?
The DREAM Act was introduced not in the last 5 years, but in 2010.
Okay.
And I would note that that was when Democrats had a supermajority in the Senate and a majority in Congress, and it failed nonetheless. So this is a tremendously difficult issue for Republicans and Democrats. Immigration reform, the DREAM Act, would have given a path to citizenship, not just legal status, for young people whose parents brought them into the country illegally. And I think this is an issue that Republicans are open to tackling as well. It's something of a bipartisan issue, though it would be more difficult for Republicans to pass. But this time frame is a particularly difficult one for Republicans, who in September alone have to look at passing a budget in order to pave the way for tax reform, as well as increasing the debt ceiling. And those are things that House Speaker Paul Ryan, who favors giving a path to citizenship for DACA recipients, needs the cooperation of more conservative House members who may be resistant to this. So he's got a limited amount of political capital he can use. And the question is where he wants to use it and whether he wants to use it on a DACA bill.
House Speaker Paul Ryan, as you said, has said he wanted the president to wait. But I haven't heard anything from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Am I missing something here?
Mitch McConnell hasn't spoken out forcefully about the DACA issue in recent days, but he has indicated that he does favor a path to legal status for these people in the past. So we know where he stands on this issue. And what's interesting right now is that Trump had said he's putting this in Congress's hands, and he's essentially on many issues, tax reform and others, making Mitch McConnell kind of the reluctant leader of the country right now. It was on health reform before, and now on a major immigration issue.
Is it going to be, let's say hypothetically, Congress isn't able to act on this, which in all likelihood it might not be, given its history and the other issues on its plate. When Donald Trump tweets something like he did last night, that he have to take it into his own hands if they don't do something, after he's already said that he believes it's unconstitutional, that Obama made the executive order, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where he's going to go from here.
You know, that seemed to me to give Congress an out. This really was something that the president was personally torn about. Mm-hmm. He had given wildly divergent signals about what he was going to do on this. He had said on the campaign trail that he was going to do away with some of these executive actions that President Obama had passed. Obama, too, had given divergent signals saying that it wasn't in his constitutional power to do these things and then mm-hmm. going ahead and doing with them. But Trump had said he was going to do away with them. And then many times once he was in office, he had said he really felt a lot of empathy for the Dreamers, as the recipients of DACA are called. And I do think that he doesn't want to be portrayed as a heartless president and he doesn't want laid at his feet the responsibility for hurting children. The issue I've compared it to is when he was moved to action in Syria by seeing images of these Syrian children who were gassed to death by Bashar Assad, and that Trump was moved to take action on that. And I think something similar could happen with DACA, but it does make it less likely. I don't know what action the president would take if Congress doesn't act. Perhaps some sort of reprieve for current DACA recipients, even if he ends the program for new recipients.
Every bill that I've seen on this issue, every iteration of it, has been that it's had Democrat and Republican co-sponsors. It looks like a firmly bipartisan issue compared to a lot of things. But you're saying there's a contingent of very conservative Republicans in the House that could put the brakes on this.
I think the issue is getting it passed through the House and the Senate. Okay. I could see a bill passing through the House with 20 to 30 Republicans. The House is more conservative than the Senate, and with, you know, a majority of Democrats. But I think the issue is Republicans, even moderate Republicans, are reluctant to simply pass this bill without any sort of trade-off. I think Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, want to pass a DACA bill in exchange for something more, border security, the building of a border wall, something like that. And there's reluctance on Democrats' part who think that DACA recipients should be given a path to legal status as a given, as a moral imperative, to trade anything for this. And so we'll have to see how that plays out in the House and whether Democrats are open to trading something in exchange for this with Republicans.
You wrote that Representative Steve King, a Republican from Iowa, called the decision by Trump to upend DACA Republican suicide. What are the politics of this? Obviously, the conservative Republican contingent in Congress, they're coming from probably very safe districts. It's not something they have to worry about. But what does he mean by Republican suicide?
I actually think that Steve King is a political outlier in many ways, okay, but also reflective of the Trump base. I think the actual politics of this and the way that the administration thought about it was that they feel they're on firm legal ground. Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the president himself is convinced that this is that the executive action was unconstitutional that President Obama took, even if it was morally right. They would support a bill in Congress that did the same thing, but they really think that immigration law is something that Congress should write, not that the executive should take. That said, they realize that in taking the action that Jeff Sessions took yesterday, they're treading on difficult emotional terrain, and that's difficult for the president. I think that's why you saw him say yesterday that if Congress doesn't do something about this, he himself will take it back up. But again, I think you'll see conservatives say, if he does have to do that, hey, this is not constitutional. And that's the argument he made originally.
Hispanics supported Trump at a higher rate than expected in the general election. How might they react? Is there a sense about how this shows up at the ballot box come November?
You know, I think it remains to be seen how this plays at the ballot box. Huge majorities of the American people support DACA as a policy, but immigration tends to be a difficult issue to poll because the way polls are worded mm-hmm. Can be tricky. So I do think it's a type of wait and see issue, and also the number of people who are directly affected by this is pretty small when you look at it, and so it's difficult to know how that will impact voters when at the ballot box.
Are people who are signed up for DACA in more danger of being deported once it is once it goes away in the future, if it does?
That's a great question. You know, this is something you're hearing a lot from Democrats right now. I actually was on a television segment with somebody yesterday morning who said that these DACA recipients are now going to be at risk of ending up in Venezuela, and they may be killed in the crossfire of cartel violence. My view, and this is just a hunch, is that this president doesn't want to be accused of deporting anybody who's currently a recipient of DACA. He gave an order yesterday to his Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency not to target any of these guys for deportation. So my hunch is that current recipients are not going to be at great risk for deportation, but I think that's something that we're going to have to see how it plays out as well.
Ileana Johnson, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Ileana Johnson is a national political reporter for Politico. Coming up, more of the pros and cons of DACA. And later on, we'll also be hearing from an opponent of DACA and a lot of immigration reforms. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. The Trump administration has announced the end of DACA, that is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. From the beginning, the program has been controversial. Critics claim the executive order was unconstitutional in 2012 when then-President Obama made it. Coming up, we'll hear from the Center for Immigration Studies, which opposes DACA. So how many people are we talking about? The Department of Homeland Security in 2016 said there were 8,237 so-called Dreamers in Ohio. The Migration Policy Institute said in 2016 that there were about 1.9 million people eligible for DACA nationally. 5,200 DACA beneficiaries currently reside in Ohio, where there are another 13,000 DACA-eligible residents. That's according to the Migration Policy Institute. And Governor Kasich, speaking on CBS this morning, said that more are welcome.
And by the way, if the Dreamers want to go somewhere and live, come to Ohio. We want all the immigrants to come to Ohio because we know how much they contribute to America.
Joining us now is Board Member Emeritus and Counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, Joe Moss. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be back, Ann.
Also with us is Professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University, Peter Shane. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Ann.
What do we know? What can we say categorically about the role of the president when it comes to immigration law?
What can we say both categorically and definitively? Very little. Part of the confusion, I think, surrounding DACA and the subsequent program DAPA, and we may have discussed this before, is that President Obama, whether intentionally or inadvertently, created the impression that the authority for these programs rested somehow on presidential power. In fact, these programs were programs instituted by the Department of Homeland Security, first Secretary Napolitano, then Secretary Jay Johnson, pursuant to statutory authority. The Homeland Security Act of 2002 empowers the Secretary of Homeland Security to set policies and priorities for enforcement of immigration law. Both that statute and the Immigration and Naturalization Act give DHS and the Attorney General the authority to make all regulations necessary and appropriate for carrying out immigration enforcement. That's the authority that they were relying on. They were not relying on some inherent presidential power over immigration. Historically, the courts, the Supreme Court has been a little Delphic on the question of how much authority the president would have if there were no statutes involved. But we're not really in that territory because Congress has extensively regulated immigration.
But until Congress acts on this particular issue, can it remain in the under the purview and until there's a lawsuit, it could ostensibly remain within the executive reach?
Well, I believe so, but I predicate that in part on the fact that I think the program was lawful to begin with. So the rationale that both the Attorney General and the Acting Secretary of Homeland Security offered in support of this decision was that the program was indefensible, was likely to have the same fate in court that the Deferred Action for Parents of Americans program had, and that, as the Secretary put it, the president could either do nothing with a probability that the program would be immediately stopped in a very disruptive way or have this orderly wind down. That was not at all the choice. First of all, if there was a threat of inequitable disruption, even if a court were to find that the program lacked proper legal authority, a court could do pretty much exactly what the Department of Homeland Security did. So they could have proceeded with the litigation. And what's interesting, I mean, in the DAPA litigation, again, the Parents of Americans program, the state of Texas, which brought the lawsuit, distinguished DACA on its in its brief. I mean, the question was obviously posed, gee, you're suing about DAPA. Why didn't you sue about DACA?
Yeah.
And they had a variety of distinctions between the two programs that led them to say, led the state of Texas to say, this is different.
Can you tell me what some of those are? That was one of the questions I was going to ask.
Sure. So one was just that there were many fewer individuals potentially subject to the program. Now,
since when is that a constitutional distinction?
Well, I'm just reporting. I'm not explaining.
Yeah, I know that.
So, and the other thing that they said, which again is weird, but I thought the whole DAPA opinion was weird, is that the DACA program never uses the phrase lawful presence in terms of what it means to get deferred action. Now, it is true that the DAPA program refers to the recipients of deferred action as being lawfully present, which is an unfortunate choice of words given that the administration was absolutely clear that there was no actual change in the technical legal status of anybody who received deferred action. The only sense in which somebody became lawfully present was that when you're in the United States without documentation, every day that you're here sort of counts. And if you're here for a certain number of days and you leave the United States, you're barred from reentering without a 10-year wait. And so what DAPA would do is sort of toll that clock. The problem is that, fortunately or unfortunately, it's really irrelevant because anybody who could qualify for DAPA would already have been in the United States for so many days that even once the clock stopped, they would still be subject to that 10-year hiatus unless they were granted some other kind of discretionary relief from the Department of Justice. But the Fifth Circuit and the opponents of both of DAPA sort of seized on the idea that the intent and effect of the order was to create some new thing called lawful presence, quote unquote, in the United States that was beyond the president's authority. This is, in my view, a completely incorrect reading of what the order meant, what the order said. But to go back to your question, what the state of Texas said about DACA is, well, at least DACA did not purport to afford anybody, quote, lawful presence, unquote. Hmm. So if the Fifth Circuit was right that what was wrong with DAPA is that it had this lawful presence idea embedded in it, then yes, it would be a distinction from DACA. Hmm.
And Ed, we may want to remind ourselves that what happened with DAPA and the review
again,
of the expansion
the
of DACA.
For people who might not be hearing it, that's the parental
that's
parents
right.
of America.
That's right. Deferred action for the parents of Americans, the individuals who may have entered with that inspection, but then had children who were U.S. citizens, and we all anticipated that eventually that was going to be expanded to maybe the children who were DACA recipients, so the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals recipients. But eventually what happened, and I know that Professor Shane was going to get to that, is that then it reached the Supreme Court, and this was the Supreme Court minus one, so that the Supreme Court came down with a 4-4 decision that allowed the Fifth Circuit upholding of the Texas judge's decision stopping the execution, the carrying out of DAPA. And by the way, this election, and Professor, I don't know if maybe we're getting too technical here, but this election of the particular district in Texas for filing this lawsuit on DACA and DAPA was highly politicized. This was a federal district judge who had written against the president and so on.
Right.
So it was a loaded.
That would be just doing their due diligence.
Right.
Well,
was legal strategy towards a not so commendable end. But yes, Texas filed it in a district court in which there was only one sitting judge, and they knew something about the judge's views.
He hated Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it was personal. Email from George. He says, is it likely that the DACA action by former President Obama would have been overturned by the courts? Obama said that his DACA executive order was only temporary and had made the previous statements that unilateral immigration changes by the president without congressional approval were not lawful. So that gets to what you're saying. There didn't seem to be – I was trying to figure out what exactly spurred this. They were saying that there was a coalition of states' attorneys general who were going to file a lawsuit.
All from red states led by the attorney general of the state of Texas. My opinion, we had a chance to talk before appearing on the air on this, and my opinion is I think it would have been upheld. I do think that DACA worked under the executive branch, notwithstanding the fact, as Professor Shane mentioned, that maybe it wasn't necessarily because of the authority of President Obama, but because of the authority of the Department of Homeland Security and the Attorney General. And I will let him clarify that. But I think it could have succeeded. But we have an Attorney General right now that has absolutely no intention of defending anybody that's an immigrant. And for that matter, maybe other folks that don't represent his specific constituency.
I guess I would state my own view only slightly differently in that I truly am not sure what the courts would do. I would say that this is what is incorrect. It's incorrect to say that the courts have held already that DACA or DAPA was unconstitutional. Neither Judge Hanna in the district court judge in Texas versus United States, the judges who were in the majority on the Fifth Circuit, none of them said that the program was unconstitutional. I'm talking about the Parents of Americans program. Mm-hmm. The idea of unconstitutionality comes from the fact that the Supreme Court, when it granted review in the case, said it would review the case, invited briefing on the question whether the program might be unconstitutional, which was an argument raised by the state of Texas, but specifically, explicitly not dealt with by the Fifth Circuit. So there's never been a judge who's actually said it's unconstitutional. And the other thing that about that 4-4 split that Joe correctly refers to is we don't know why the four who would have affirmed the injunction did it. For all we know, they would have affirmed simply on the ground that the administration had not followed the statutory procedures for public notice and an opportunity for public comment before adopting the program. The Fifth Circuit said that the procedural error was fatal, but they also said it was a violation. It went further than the president's powers or the secretary's powers under the statute. We don't know that the four who voted to uphold the Fifth Circuit's judgment necessarily agreed that it exceeded the statutory powers of the secretary. Again, for all we know, they were just affirming the judgment based on the procedural violation.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the decision announced yesterday by the Trump administration to end DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals program. We're referring to DACA and we're referring to DAPA. The DACA is referring to children, childhood arrivals. The DAPA is parents of Americans, which would be children born here. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Trump administration was spurred to act in part, we've learned, because of threats of a lawsuit from the several states' attorney general. Now the other side suing. California and Democrats have said they will sue. There is apparently a lawsuit pending by an individual. What are their arguments? Is there a way to summarize them, Joe Moss?
If you had asked me this question yesterday, I would have said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And to tell you the truth, I heard in passing this morning on NPR that, in fact, what they're alleging is a similar argument as the Muslim ban, that this is racially motivated. And I don't know if Professor Shane heard anything any differently than that or has a more creative argument.
Because the presumption is it affects mostly people who are Hispanic.
I certainly am a huge supporter of DACA, but I couldn't think of a legal argument that would be successful as far as a lawsuit is concerned as to what the president did. If President Obama enacted DACA, then
the current president can
do away with it. And my reasoning stopped right there. But apparently more creative minds have come up saying, you know, the reason that you are doing this is because you don't want brown people in the community. And we'll wait and see where that goes.
Yeah.
So there are other theories. And I don't know, you know, which plaintiffs are going to line up behind which theories. And by the way, one thing to note about the attorneys general who are threatening suit if DACA remained in place. Of course, the Tennessee attorney general, who was originally part of that group, changed his mind and backed out. Hmm. So that was an interesting development. So there is the sort of unconstitutional discrimination theory that Joe referred to. But sort of legally more modest theories, and these are, you know, not slam dunks, but they are, you know, they are certainly arguable. One is, ironically, perhaps, that the Department of Homeland Security committed legal error here by not having notice and comment before revoking DACA. That this new document amounts to a regulation that does affect what would otherwise be the substantive rights of persons, private persons outside the department, and that they simply can't adopt that rule without going through the procedures that the Administrative Procedure Act requires. Now, it made a point, which I've heard others to say, well, you know, if the Obama administration didn't have notice and comment going in, why could Trump be required to have notice and comment going out? And the D.C. Circuit has actually answered that question. That is, the procedural error in the adoption of a rule does not excuse procedural error in repeal of the rule. So whether or not the Fifth Circuit was right about notice and comment for the program going in, they would they still might be required.
But two wrongs don't make a right.
Two wrongs don't get make a right. And the other theory, and again, I don't want to – and I'm not advertising these as slam dunks, but just perhaps legally more modest theories than just relying on the Fifth Amendment, the what we call the equal protection part of due process. The other theory is that this would be arbitrary and capricious, as the statute says, under the Administrative Procedure Act, because the rationale for the order doesn't make sense, is incoherent. The administration is arguing that the idea that supports the reversal of DACA is the threat of litigation. That raises one question, whether it's ever permissible for an administration to get rid of a regulation that's on the books or a policy on the books just because they're threatened with a lawsuit without regard to the actual merits of the lawsuit. I could imagine, but again, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I could imagine a court being persuaded that the rationality, determining the rationality of this, of what DHS did yesterday, depends on whether or not DACA in fact is lawful. And if the court decides, the legal challenge against DACA is weak, then rescinding the program on legal grounds is irrational.
In California, when the correct me if I'm wrong, when the legislature enacted gay marriage rights, same-sex marriage rights, and then the voters rescinded them, that was overturned because you can't take away a right.
Well, there is.
It's way simplified, but does that come in play here? That kind of a thing?
I don't think so, because the rights that we're talking about are kind of temporary grants.
It was temporary in the first place, the nature of
discretionary
of it,
relief that was already subject to revocability under the order.
Before we need to take a break, but before we do, I mean, I just want to briefly ask you, Joe Mas, what legal advice are you giving people who have already enrolled in DACA, who are on the books now?
Yeah, and of course, the legal rights are whatever rights exist as a consequence of this rollback.
Yeah.
One of the things that cannot happen is that they cannot apply now.
Right.
If they already have an application for renewal, because don't forget, these were two-year renewals.
They're throwing those applications out.
Well, no. If you've already filed, those
you're
are
fine.
Still
okay.
under consideration, and they can either be approved or denied depending on whether they continue to meet the criteria of that. But obviously, the legal advice is you cannot file. You cannot file from this
point.
But
if you have filed and you're a beneficiary of DACA right now.
Yeah. Well, one concern, and let me go back in history a little bit, because I was a huge advocate of telling these young people to apply for DACA. Everybody has applied. There were some people that were afraid to apply, probably about half, because the Pew Center estimated that about 12% of the population would qualify and only about 6%. Actually applied.
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge advocate of that. And I said, look, I understand that there is a risk if the rug is pulled out from under your feet, as it now has, that they know where you live. And you would be the low-hanging fruit that ICE could then come and pick up.
Now they have, of course, said that the Trump administration has said that they've instructed the department not to do that. But yeah, Peter Shane?
Well, I just wanted to go back to this applications. So Joe, of course, is right that the department said unequivocally that they will not entertain any new initial applications. But they are entertaining pending applications. Mm-hmm. And a very important detail is because people who get this kind of deferred action qualify under another regulation that President Reagan, his administration, adopted for work authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So if your work authorization – it's not expired yet, but it would expire before March 5th of 2018. They are giving you until October 5th to apply for a renewal. So this is very important. So the people who have employment authorization documents now, even if, you know, if they think, well, I'll be okay for the next 6 months, they could actually apply for an extension of those, but they have to do it early. They have to do it by October 5th.
And the work permit is an essential part of DACA, so I would say that 100% of the kids have
work permits. We'll go ahead and do that. We'll be right back and continue our conversation about the news that the Trump administration has announced the end of DACA as it stands today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Trump administration's decision to end the DACA program, that is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which could affect as many as 13,000 undocumented immigrants in Ohio. Yesterday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the policy change and criticized the Obama administration for implementing DACA, which in his view
deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions. Such an open-ended circumvention of immigration laws was an unconstitutional exercise of authority by the executive branch.
But now President Trump has tweeted late yesterday, that, well, you know, if the Congress doesn't take this up and doesn't do anything, he may take it up again himself. Still with us, board member emeritus and counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, Joe Mas, also professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State, Peter Shane. And joining us now is the executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies, which favors stricter immigration policy and has opposed DACA, Mark Krikorian. Welcome back, Mark.
Glad to be here.
What's your opinion of how the Trump administration has taken on the issue of DACA in the last 24 hours?
Well, until last night, I thought they had done an okay job.
Yes,
I mean, it was long overdue. The president had campaigned saying that he would end DACA on day one, and he didn't. He didn't even partially end DACA. In other words, I would have understood stopping the acceptance of new applications for people who didn't already have it, and then continuing renewals for some period of time, a grace period, like they've announced yesterday. They should have done that in January. They didn't, but better late than never. The problem, of course, is that then the president, with his tweet, literally completely undermines the entire point of the deadline, because the deadline was to focus the minds of Republicans and Democrats, try to force some actual politics, in other words, some compromising where Democrats would get some of what they want, you know, amnesty for the Dreamers, in exchange for some things we need to limit the fallout of such an amnesty, like, for instance, mandatory E-Verify as an online system to help weaken the magnet of jobs that draws illegal immigrants in the first place. Anyway, by the president saying, you know, well, you know, after 6 months, maybe I'll just do something else, it's not clear what that even means, I won't say he's ensured that there won't be a successful bill within the next 6 months, but he certainly has made that a lot more likely.
You know, before I heard about the president's tweet, the first question I was going to ask you was that he's kicked the issue back to Congress where DACA-esque legislation has never passed before, both chambers. And I was going to ask you how you think the odds have changed at this point.
Well, they're a lot less because of this tweet.
Mm-hmm.
I think the odds were better than they had been in the past, precisely because Obama had created these facts on the ground I agree with the Attorney General. His action was clearly unlawful. He himself had said that it would have been unlawful if he wanted to do it before he did it for political expediency in the lead up to the 2012 election. But nonetheless, hundreds of thousands of people have been given these work permits, and they're a sympathetic group of illegal immigrants. They're a special case, different from all other illegals. And because of that, I thought, you know, there might be a decent chance that at least eight Democrats might be willing, especially those up for re-election in Trump states, might be willing to vote for some kind of package. The president has just sabotaged himself. You know, leading me to think he had a ghostwriter write The Art of the Deal, because this is not the way you do deals, negotiating with yourself against yourself on day one.
Yeah, Joe Moss?
He did have a ghostwriter.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah,
right, exactly.
And we know who he is, and
okay,
he's been in the media.
I'm not sure he's read the book either, then, you know.
Well, that, he says he's never read a book, so I don't know. But, you know, Mark mentioned something that I think is interesting, because he I think it's referring to a statement that press secretary that Sarah Huckabee Sanders mentioned mm-hmm. yesterday in the press conference. And that is that what the president wants is a comprehensive reform that includes some sort of a DACA solution, but also has enhanced security and enforcement. That's where you're going to have trouble, I think, getting the Democratic support.
But
for,
are the
because
Dem-
we don't when we talk about immigration reform, we're not talking about added security and
well, and of course they were talking about the wall as well and funding for the wall. I think Mark Corcoran, you brought that up. But you're saying they're not going to. But would they just as soon see DACA go away then as negotiate with on those other terms?
Well, negotiate is one thing, but to fund the wall and then at the same time, you know, protect 800,000 people, and at the same time do something that is absolutely insane. I mean, we don't build castles anymore for a particular reason. I can't imagine that the wall is just a logical solution. Mm. But I guess that's a topic.
That's kind of an off topic. But as far as the politics of it, Mark Krikorian, you're saying that it doesn't matter now because he took away the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say it doesn't matter at all, but mm-hmm. it's clearly much less urgent for anyone in Congress to try to come up with a solution. Look, the only way they do anything, whether it's the debt limit or passing spending bills or whatever it is when there's a deadline. Sometimes they even stop the clock so that they pretend it's not midnight yet. You know, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I understand that. I mean, I need a deadline to get anything done. You know, I understand. But that's why you have a deadline and you stick with it. And I think the president has really sabotaged. He shot himself in the foot on this issue.
Is the supposition that if this ends up in his court again, that he'll reinstitute DACA?
Yeah, I don't see how he could do that, having his attorney general issued an opinion saying that it's unlawful, which it clearly is. I don't know what that would involve. There are some other things you could do where you could sort of issue an instruction that, you know, if employers have employed somebody, this category of people with work permits, they can continue to employ them for 60 days until something happens. There's sort of stopgap things like that, but I don't think that tweet represents some kind of formal policy thing. I think it's just him freelancing the way he often does.
Can I just say—
Sure, Peter Shane.
We're reading political tea leaves, and you know, that's an art form under the easiest of circumstances, which these aren't. But I do see the landscape a little bit differently. I think— You know, the wall too far for the Democrats would be 10 cents for the wall. But I don't think that eliminates all room for, you know, compromise on other things that might be security enhancing from the GOP side. So I still think there is some room for that. And the other thing to be the two other things to be said, you know, these are all people, at least in the House, and a third of these folks in the Senate are facing re-election next year, and they're going to hear a lot from people about this issue. It's a very emotional issue, not just for the applicants and the recipients, but for people who realize that the forced removal of the DACA recipients from the United States makes no policy sense. So there's going to be a lot of political pressure to do something. And it's also a way for particularly those Republicans who feel that they're actually in competitive districts to show that they're not in lockstep with Trump. As far as the tweets are concerned, I have to think that, you know, the value of that currency is going down. Hmm. I I honestly, you know, if there are members of Congress who are still calculating what they need to get done or not need to get done based upon any conviction that the president will or will not do what he has said with more or less clarity he will or will not do, I mean, I would just be amazed. I mean, how many times does anyone have to contradict themselves before the people who are looking at that person realize, you know, you are just irrelevant to my calculus of costs and benefits?
Mark Krikorian?
Yeah, well, the one point I wanted to bring up is this idea that somehow when people's work permits expire, which isn't even going to happen for 6 months, and then will take 2 years to be completed if nothing else happens. And
to work through the whole roster of DACA.
Yeah, the work permits are good for 2 years.
Yeah.
So the idea that then that means that 700,000 or 800,000 people are going to be deported from the United States is absurd. I mean, it's a red herring. You know, ICE is not going to be printing out lists of names of, you know, whose work permits expired today and then hand them out. It's not going to happen. There are already some DACAs who have been deported even with that status because they were gang members or committed some kind of crimes, and that will continue. But the bulk of these people are not – there's literally no – it's science fiction say that, you know, when it expires the next day, they're going to be rounded
up. Well, I think that's science fiction, but you don't think they're low-hanging fruit?
They are if you wanted to go that way, and I do. I'm telling you, it's not going to happen.
Well, logistically, it would be a nightmare and expensive and that kind of a thing.
It's just not going to happen.
You know, Mark Krikorian, you made reference in a recent commentary that the view of DACAs as children infantilizes them, and I'm wondering about that. You know, that kind of the optics of all of this, and what you make of that, and how it matters whether or not we know that many of them are adults.
Yeah, I mean, almost all of them are adults. There are a few that are older teenagers who aren't, who are still, you know, 16, 17-year-olds, but not very many. The oldest are now 36 years old. And it's, you know, it's this referring to them as kids and children all the time is part of this same trope that a lot of people on the left use. You know, it's for the children, that kind of thing. And if they were children, then it would not be a problem to deport them because they hadn't been grown up here yet. They would go home with their families. It's precisely because they're adults, but adults who came as children and grew up here, that there is a an argument for amnestying them.
Yeah.
And my point is that referring to them as kids is both is false and it undermines the whole argument. Because literally, if you have a family of illegal immigrants and one of the people in the family is a 7-year-old and he was illegal too, there's no reason to let that young person stay. He hasn't grown up here yet. It's somebody who's gone through our whole school system, has developed his identity as an American. That's where there's a case to make for an act of mercy to let them stay.
But the case is also based on the fact that they arrived in the United States at a point in which, you know, their agency, as we should say, was not implicated. It was somebody else's decision.
They were children at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not deferred action for children. It's deferred action for childhood arrivals.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, the child, you know, all adults were children once.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to say that this is some kind of leftist propaganda is just nonsense.
No, but the point is that's not the way. I mean, look, Democratic politicians are routinely saying we shouldn't be using children as bargaining chips. I mean, they are not saying they came as kids. They're saying
it's
they
true.
Are children, and that's designed to confuse people who are, you know, who don't follow politics and policy all that well, and they just sort of get, oh, really? They're children? Well, we should let them stay. That's I mean, that is happening. That's not fake.
Well, we know the Trump administration appreciates nuance, so that's, that's good point.
Mark Krikorian, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time as always.
Thank you.
Mark Krikorian is Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Also, Peter Shane, Professor at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State. Thanks to you as well.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And Joseph Moss, Board Member Emeritus and Counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Joe, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate both of your time.
Good seeing you again, man.
That's it today. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.